What's going on, guys? Kevin Estello of Fieldcraft Survival. I'm the host of this advertisement for this podcast. Guys, this podcast is only possible with our sponsors, with the folks that advertise here, and I want to recognize two of them. The first sponsor is Sig Sauer. Guys, Sig Sauer is more than a firearms company. Sig Sauer produces a lot of the accessories for those firearms that they do make, including amazing ammunition. I want to talk to you about that ammunition just for a hot second. I'm a ballistics nerd. I've attended the Sig Sauer Academy, precision scope rifle, advanced precision scope rifle, reach for 1,000. When I was living out in Utah and we were using the Kefaru property out there, I mean, I was shooting out to 980 yards on a regular basis. And I'll tell you some of the best ammo that I found to do that, Sig Sauer ammunition. Something that you should know about their ammo in ballistics and long range shooting, you got to know what standard deviation is between the rounds. You don't want one round that's going, say, 2,600 feet per second and another round that's going 2,400 feet per second out of the same lot. Well, the Sig ammo has a very, very low standard deviation. That's what I've found. We're talking only 5 feet per second, which is very negligible. So I love the stuff that Sig puts out there. They make great, great ammo, including some really good ammo for their 365. They have a special round that is designed for that pistol and other short micro compact pistols like the 365. So I'm a huge fan of Sig and I'm very thankful for them being, you know, one of the podcast sponsors. And of course, if you are going to train and you're going to carry a pistol, maybe you're going to carry their ammunition, then I would recommend that you guys train at the Sig Sauer Academy. It's up in New Hampshire and they also have training around the country, but that's their primary location. And the Sig training is awesome. You can do everything from pistol to carbine to shotgun to precision scope rifle. You name it, you can do it there. So guys, please head over to sigsauer.com, take a look at all the things that they have to offer. Now, there's another company that I want to recommend, and it's what I currently have in my tumbler right here, and that is Hoist Hydration. There is a 10% off discount if you use the code FIELDCRAFT10. That is FIELDCRAFT10. Guys, go to the website, www.drinkhoist.com. Hoist Hydration is pretty awesome because it has very little sugar. If you spend a lot of time working out, you need to replace your electrolytes. Hoist is a great drink to do that. In addition, Hoist has no artificial colors. So, you know, you go to the store and like you want to get an energy drink, and a lot of people, mainly kids, get attracted by like the bright colors that they see in the refrigerator. Well, you're not going to find that with Hoist, but you are going to find a drink that is going to help you rehydrate. And it's used by a lot of elite athletes. Our instructors here at the company love Hoist. When I was out in Utah, we'd get cases of Hoist, and every once in a while, I'd be able to steal one or two away from our marketing director who has a whole refrigerator of it. So if you guys ever go to our tower office, or if you ever run by his office, go to his refrigerator. Maybe he'll never notice it. Take a couple of the bottles, try it out. I think you're going to love it. Guys, Hoist Hydration is awesome stuff. I found it nationally, right? You can probably find it in your grocery store, or you can, like I said, you can go to www.drinkhoist.com and you can use that coupon code FIELDCRAFT10 and get yourself a discount off of Hoist. So I'm going to tell you, it's good stuff. You know, people say you need to hydrate. I agree. Most people are walking around dehydrated. Well, you might want to do something about that. You might want to drink Hoist. All right, guys, here we go. Let's get to this podcast. Hey guys, welcome to the Fieldcraft Survival Podcast. I'm your host for this episode. My name is Kevin Estella. I am highly, highly caffeinated today. There's no doubt about it. I'm also running on a lot of cheesecake. I just had a birthday, so my guys Jerry Young and John Welk, they both got me cheesecake. John got me cheesecake first thing in the morning, so I ate half of a freaking cheesecake in the morning, and then for dinner, I ate another half of a cheesecake, a different one. So now in our freezer over here, or our fridge over here, or refrigerator, whatever, you can tell I'm freaking jamming. I have like another half of a cheesecake. So I'm getting really fat. I'm highly caffeinated, but I'm really excited to bring this guest back on the show. And I say back because we recorded it before. We had a couple technical glitches, but you know, if it was good the first time, we're going to capture that, you know, lightning in a jar a second time. I got a good buddy of mine on the podcast today, who I first met in 2016 when I was out in California. We hung out for a bit. You know, he gave me a spool tool, but I had known about this guy for quite some time. I was following some of the stuff he was doing online. Really, really awesome dude. And over the years, I've had a lot of laughs with him. We go back and forth messages. You know, he's someone who understands the survival industry. He's got a military background. He understands the philosophy of stoicism, which we're going to get into some pretty good, you know, depth and breadth. And then we're also going to talk about some of the pet peeves in the survival or tactical industry that's out there. So without further ado, I'm going to take a breath because I don't think I've exhaled or breathed in once yet. I'd like to welcome Brady Pasola to the podcast. Brady, how you doing, buddy?
My man. Good catching up with you again, man. We had a great first podcast, but yeah, the technical difficulties kind of got out of hand. So it's like, hey, let's just reshoot this and have another great conversation.
Yeah, you and me, we both know how to like shoot guns and light fires. As far as, you know, technical stuff, editing and whatnot, hey, judge us, right? Like, I mean, I know you're a radio guy. That's your background. Like you've got radio skill sets, but like I don't. Yeah. So I'm just happy to have you back on, man.
Man, it's always good to have a conversation with a buddy. Yeah, we go way back. I think you and I really, you know, started noticing each other and talking with each other and going back and forth in the early Facebook communities of the survival world, where people were just coming out and building their little communities and stuff. And oh man, it was so much fun to watch just how bad survival folks eat each other. Instructors, so-called instructors, the early days of YouTube, where you got someone out there is like, my name is Billy Bob, will you teach survival? And I'm going to show you how to start a fire. And it's like grainy, shitty shooting. It's like, oh my gosh. It was beautiful back then. It really was.
Yeah. And some of the best material is still in that really raw form where you can tell that the people aren't the greatest on camera, or they don't understand editing, or the worst is the sound. If you hear the wind, man, that is hitting that microphone and it just sounds like, you know, that's the most distracting thing. So I'd rather watch a video if it has good sound than if it has, you know, better video. And one of the best videos back in the day was Bruce Buckshot's trapping video, which I thought I first watched that video, it was like a, you know, punked, you know, where he's sitting in this like plastic chair in front of a garage. I don't even think the camera was like squared up to the folds in the garage door. But I mean, he's putting out some like legit knowledge. I'm like, this is a great video. Terrible video, but great knowledge. You know what I mean? Like
terrible production value, great knowledge.
do you remember the first movie or TV show? Because I know that you were from the Midwest, but like, do you remember the first movie or TV show where you saw like the great outdoors portrayed and you were like, damn, this is cool. I want to go out there in the woods too.
Oh yeah. Well, I used to watch as a kid, Marty Stauffer's Wild America on PBS.
Oh, I'm not familiar with this one. Tell me about it.
Oh, Marty Stauffer's Wild America. I mean, he had these great videos of like pine martens and animals and stuff like that. And that's what always kept me wanting to go outside, man. I'm like, I want to go be like Marty. And then just be out there in the wilderness, because I grew up on a farm in northern Minnesota. So I found a lot of my peace in the wilderness, running around, you know, being stupid and getting lost and carrying either a slingshot or a BB gun, depending on what window I shout out. Mm-hmm. My dad's like, all right, give me that. No, I'm doing. But yeah, Marty Stauffer's Wild America was great one to watch as a kid. It was always on PBS. Nova was always awesome.
God, that network. Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, Nova.
I could watch Nova all day long as a kid, because we had like two channels. We had CBS and PBS. And then on PBS, and maybe some people know who I'm talking about, or maybe not, but I always loved it. It was my favorite skit comedy show. It was The Red Green Show. I grew up watching that, and it's a Canadian skit show. And as some people may have heard this saying, goes, if women can't find you handsome, they should at least find you handy. And that came from him. But it was a wonderful show that also like kept me going outdoors and stuff, because you do some wacky shit out there.
Man, I haven't heard Nova in a long time. I'm gonna have to look up that Marty Stauffer. I haven't seen it personally. I mean, most people when I ask that question, you know, just casually around the campfire or whatever, they say things like Camp, what was it, Whitewater Summer with Kevin Bacon. Like that was a cool movie about going in the great outdoors. Or, you know, another thing was like MacGyver, when he would, you know, be featured in the outdoors instead of like trying to escape the commies, you know, in Cold War.
Oh yeah.
You know, wherever they filmed it. But most people will bring up movies like that or the Goonies. And, you know, I think that was like the golden era of awesome, like wilderness movies. You know what I mean? Like,
dude, 80s and 90s had some great movies. And for some reason in the 90s, Hollywood had this hard on for like Midwest and Minnesota. Like all the movies were shot in the Midwest. Grumpy Old Men, mm-hmm. all that old stuff. I mean, it was, you know, that was, yeah. They did have a hard on for the outdoors. Was it Jungle to Jungle?
Oh my God. With
Tim Allen. You remember that one?
Yeah. That was actually a really funny movie where his kid's name was Mimi Siku.
Mimi Siku.
By the way, this is proof that like my brain is filled with random fucking knowledge. And like, I wish I had capacity to remember important things like trigonometry and calculus, but what do I remember? A stupid ass movie. Grumpier Old Men was with Burgess Meredith as the grandfather, right? And he's like, oh, I ate a pound of bacon for breakfast and a pound of bacon for lunch. And I drank my dinner and, you know, and then he had the hots for Sophia Loren and Grumpier Old Men. Like, yeah, they love that. Holy crap. So you grew up in the Midwest and then you eventually make your way to the Marines. How did you make that decision?
Well, like any typical small town kid, you know, I grew up in, in an area called the Iron Range in northern Minnesota. And I always joke that you had the choice of the three M's when you graduate high school: the mines, the military, or meth. And so I joined the Marine Corps. I was a senior in high school when the towers fell. And so I kind of made a decision at that point to join the Marine Corps. I was also a skinny kid. You know what I mean? I got bullied a little bit here and there, you know, and got beat up on. So I was a pretty scrawny kid and not much for defending myself. And so I also had something else I think I had to prove, either to myself or whoever it was. And so I joined the Marine Corps. Went to boot camp in 2002, summer of 2002. And then I got assigned to be a radio operator with an artillery unit. Did that for 4 years, had a good time, got out, got recalled. And for some reason they recalled me and they made a bunch of us like infantry and radio, MPs or garrisons. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, that's interesting. So did that for a little while, got out and became a firearms instructor. I started my own survival school there. And that's where you and I, you know, around what, 2010, 2011?
Yeah, sometime around that.
Yeah, just trying to teach people outdoor education and stuff like that. And that's where you and I really linked up. And later on, around 2016, I got into executive protection. And it's been a lot of fun. And then around COVID 2020 is when I started the Gray Man Project to bring a more palatable approach, pragmatic approach to preparedness, just because of watching people even just lose their minds about toilet paper. So I want to bring, you know, combine that with Stoic philosophy to bring a little bit more calmness to the chaos and allow people to think more rationally and help them move past like the emotional adversity they're experiencing through COVID that I think a lot of people went through.
Let's back it up a little bit, going back to the radio work that you did in the military, because a lot of civilians are going into amateur radio. And I know that when we met up in California that one time, you were showing me features on, you know, radios and antennas. And I was like, holy crap, like you can do a deep dive. If you have any words of wisdom for anyone that's listening about like leveling up their radio skills, let's say that someone buys like a basic radio, what would you recommend? You say like three tips from Brady.
Yeah, sure. I was a radio operator. I was always a big fan of HF. So you have UHF, VHF, and HF. And HF is what you can bounce off the atmosphere and get distance off. UHF and VHF, in order for you to get some distance, you got to either use a repeater. And so the civilian world, you need to get your ham radio license. That's the first step. Study for your ham radio license. Get your ham radio license. If you're a prepper and you do not have your ham radio license, I got to ask you what the heck you're doing. You got to have your ham radio license and learn radio procedures, and then learn. Second tip: learn radio wave propagation. Learn radio wave propagation. It's really important to learn about antennas, how RF works, you know, whether it's directional, omnidirectional, bidirectional. Hell, you could make a directional antenna running slash wire from the top of your house to the ground and make it directional. So learn radio wave propagation. And then the third tip is learn the difference between the frequencies, HF, VHF, UHF, you know, why use one or the other, you know, whether one's a 2 centimeter band or 70 centimeter band or 2 meter band and 70 centimeter band, right? So learn, okay, if I want to punch through these walls, I'm going to use, let's say, UHF, or if I want to get some distance, I'm going to use VHF. So those are three things. And look, here's the thing is, if you are a prepper, you can either you can either listen to the disc jockey on the radio, the DJ on the radio going, well, it's now hour five, the power outage out here. Or you can listen to the local rednecks and they're going, well, I ain't got no power out here, but I heard this company's coming out to fix the wires. And, oh, we got power on here now. And in this neighborhood, we got power on. They're going to give you firsthand actionable intel of what's really going on in the area around you versus the DJ sitting somewhere way far away, just relaying reports from either law enforcement, the scanner, or whoever calls in.
Wow. Okay. So now let's back it up to another thing that you just mentioned, firearms instructor. You've probably taught a bunch of people over the years. I know one time I posted something and you were like, yeah, man, good grip on that gun. I can tell you got your thumbs forward. Like you were critiquing my stuff from afar. And I was like, okay, cool. I got Grady's, you know, seal of approval. You know, a lot of people, when they want to get into the firearms world, they'll often say, like, man, I want to go into learning a pistol. I want to learn shotgun. I want to learn rifle. I don't even know where to begin. Which one do I start with, right? Such a common question is, do I get a rifle first? Do I get a handgun first? Another common question is, what are, say, three guns that everyone should own for whatever purpose, home defense, survival, or whatever? So let's answer those two. How would you recommend people get into learning how to shoot firearms? And the other thing is, what would you recommend that they purchase for, say, three firearms in their, say, survival? I don't want to use the term arsenal, but in their gun rack.
So it really is situation dependent on how you make your decision, right? So if you, like, say, live in a rather urban environment and you want, say, self-defense, you know, people will recommend, hey, get a shotgun. But people aren't really used to that. They're not used to the recoil a shotgun really produces, right? Nice. So we'll get a slug and then alternate it with, you know, double lock buck. I've heard all these things. The reality is ask yourself, are you emotionally capable, first off, or emotionally mature enough to have a firearm? Because I watched people come into the shop and they'll say, well, I just want to get a gun, keep it in the safe in case for home defense. I'm like, well, you know, I'm an instructor. I have you taking the right. No, that's fine. Just keep it in the safe and that's good. And like, you're hurting yourself at that point. You're actually becoming a liability yourself. So if you decide to go and purchase a firearm, first off, you need to be mentally stable. You need to check your emotional status before you go and do something like that, right? Are you mature enough? Do you have the money to purchase training and ammo to train? Because it is a procedural type of a learning. You have to learn, you know, how to stance, how to hold a gun, how to stand, how to, you know, how to aim the darn thing, you know. And so first things first, check to make sure that you're emotionally mature enough. Do you have the finances for it? And then when you go to a gun shop, you got all sorts of characters at the gun shop behind the counter. You got old dudes who haven't seen their toes in 4 years or carrying an old J frame, you know, revolver going, well, you need a revolver. I recommend, you know, a GP100 or whatever it was. And the reason why is it never jams. Great, but the trigger is about 15 fucking pounds. Mm-hmm. Who's pulling that thing accurately in a time where your adrenaline is flooding your body? When you need to use your firearm self-defense, you're in a fight, right? So look for people that are a bit more pragmatic, a little bit more easygoing, that aren't, you know, Glock fanboys or two World War fanboys and stuff like that. Look for someone who goes, hey, look, I want to put a fire in your hand that you're comfortable with, that you can grip and that you can accurately shoot. So first off, I would say, you know, get yourself a handgun. I think that's the first and foremost. Learn how to operate that firearm. It's most, I think, versatile in urban environments. I think it's the most, compact, easy to carry. And, you know, if you're looking to get your CCW, you know, that's what you're going to qualify with, you know. So in terms of getting which gun to get, I hate to say it. You know, I've been around Glocks a lot. I've shot a lot of different guns. And I think the Glock is probably one of the more versatile, useful weapons to get, especially for first-time shooters. It's easy to operate. The only thing that I've never liked when it comes to beginners is that it doesn't have an external safety. Of course, it has three safeties on the inside, right? But as far as the external safety goes, there isn't one. So you have to maintain finger discipline at all times, no matter what you do. So if I was to recommend a Glock, you know, I've had guys, it's funny, boyfriends or husbands will bring the girls inside and be like, well, I want to get my girl a gun. Which one should I get? Honey, I think you should get the Glock 26, a little subcompact. Don't get your girlfriends a subcompact. It kicks. They're not going to like it. It doesn't feel good, especially Glock 27. I hate that thing. It's a 40. And, you know, and people are like, well, you're just a little bitch, Brady. Well, you know what? Fair enough. That's what I am then. But I do not like the subcompact Glocks, the 26, 27. Don't get your girlfriends that. Trust me, every inch matters. Get her a Glock 34. That is a 5.5-inch barrel with a longer sight radius, a 3.5-pound trigger pull, as they say, and is way more accurate and has a lot less recoil and has a lot more material to absorb that recoil. So you're shooting a lot more accurately with it. As a first time for anybody, you know, a Glock 17 or a Glock 34 is a great. Glock 34 is a competition model. A Glock 17 is standard home defense, standard duty type of gun. So, but for concealed carry, you know, I like my M&P shield. I can deep conceal carry that thing or a Glock 19, depending on the weather. And depending on how much of my gut is spilling over my belt.
Now, what about rifles? I mean, the old school method, you know, we always tell people like Bradford Anger said, you need a 22, you need a 12 gauge, you need a 30-06. But I mean, he was writing in the mid 20th century and he was strictly like cabin up in Alaska. Those are the three that he would say everyone needs. Yeah. Nowadays, yeah. I mean, different terrain, different potential threats out there. I mean, you look at some of the calibers that are available for an AR, and it's like you could have one AR lower and multiple uppers and have something for hunting and have something for home defense. And then you look at, I mean, with the shotguns, we just ran a shotgun class here. And I mean, the shotgun beats the crap out of you if you don't know what you're doing. And even when you do know what you're doing, I mean, it gives you problems. Like it's definitely not it's not a friend of yours. If you don't know what you're doing, it screws with you. So, I mean, where do you stand now? I mean, I know that you live up in the mountains. I'm not going to say what state or what region or anything like that, but I know you're up in the mountains. Yeah. What do you recommend?
You know, it really, again, situational dependent. If you're more in the backcountry, you know, let's say you're a hunter and you're in a more wooded environment, right? 30, 30, 35, right? Brush gun, you know, it'll take down deer, it'll take down what you need to, you know. If you want to get a 45-70 because you got bears in the area and stuff like that, hey, do what you got to do, you know. Those are sexy guns. I love a lever action gun. And can I just say real quick, I know I'm going to catch flack for this, would you all stop trying to tack out these fucking lever guns? Not you.
Thank you.
The audiences. Yeah. Good God. People are putting Picatinny rails and forward grips. And don't get me wrong, though. A can looks pretty sick on a 30-30. I will admit that. A can looks pretty sick on it. But, oh, my God. Leave the cowboy guns alone, man. Stick.
I just had.
I've been looking at it. I'm like, oh, man. Knock it off, please.
I just had. God, they got the. Jason Vincent on from, I just had Jason Vincent on from Field Ethos Journal. And we were talking about how much we hate tactical lever guns. Like I've got a, my 4570 is a scout rifle, right? It's got a forward mounted optic on it, like a Jeff Cooper rifle. But I mean, I'm not going to put a, you know, Picatinny rail on it. I'm not going to put a skeletonized stock on it. I wish I could put a suppressor on that thing, but the barrel is cut so short already that I can't redo the comp on the, or the porting that's on the barrel. But there are like shell carriers now and like, you know, M-lock four ends. And it's like, dude, that gun was never meant to be, you know, tactical, but I get it. And you know, the Crave back in COVID, or at least what I saw, or not Crave, Rave, Jesus, coffee. The Rave that was back during COVID was, you know, people were doing like a paracord wrapped lever loop.
I hate that so much.
And I showed a video how to do it, and then I cut it right off. I was like, this is so stupid.
And people don't realize is how slick 550 cord gets when it gets wet. Yeah. It is so slick. That's the thing is like, I'm such a big fan of what I call heritage materials, wood, steel, and leather.
Mm-hmm.
And those old cowboy guns, man, the only thing that you should be adding onto your gun is a good tooled leather strap, a good tool leather buttstock pad with the extra shells in there. I mean, that looks beautiful.
Something tells me if you could go back in time, you would have rather have been a Marine when they were issuing like M14s, right?
No. They didn't have body armor. No, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I look at some of the old Marine rifles and stuff like that. Beautiful. I am a traditionalist in the sense of like, hey, look, I love that old wood, that metal, that leather, you know, the old wool and stuff like that. That is cool to me, right? And don't get me wrong. I've seen some lever action, tactile lever action guns. I'm like, that's pretty cool looking, but also you're so fucking lame for doing that. You know, it's like, leave them alone. You got the ARs. But yeah, if you're in a wooded area, I think, you know, heavily wooded area where your average shot isn't going to be more than 50 to 75 yards, hey, get yourself a 35, get yourself a leather action, you know, a Winchester or a Marlin, or a Henry. If you're shooting out, you know, if you got, you know, beyond 100 yards, you know, all right, get yourself a 30-06. If you're taking down deer or whatever it is, you know, get yourself a 30-06 with a good glass on it. You know, shotguns, I mean, you can't go wrong with an 870.
Mm-hmm.
Just a good old 870, you know. If you're looking for something that's more tactical defense, you know, was it years ago, there was a shooting. It was a couple. He's here in California. I forgot their names. But when they took them out, they were in their SUVs. And a 5.56 isn't really great on vehicles. But a good shotgun with a good slug behind it punches. It really does punch. And that's what they used to take them out with, shotguns. So something, if you're looking for like a more urban, hard-hitting, kind of penetrating type gun, I would go with like a semi-automatic shotgun with a pistol grip and maybe a red dot sight. You know, that's a pretty cool piece of kit that is more, hey, look, I got kicked down doors. It's the apocalypse. I got kicked out doors and find supplies for my family. That's a great one too. You know, when it comes to ARs, you know, find yourself a good AR, you know, just stay away from polymer lowers and Andersons. So, you know, having a good AR that's more pragmatic, and look, you know, it's one thing to be the technical guy. It's another thing to be more pragmatic and understand your firearm more. So, you know, okay, this piece of kit will work great with my barrel, or my, you know, this rail will work better, or this buttstock will work better and stuff like that. So learn, when you do decide to get into firearms and get in a hobby, learn why each part works the way it works, or what's good about it. Learn the makeup of you know, the composition of the materials. Understand why, okay, well, this won't work with this, or why this won't work with that, or this trigger sucks, or I like this two-stage trigger, or why is this trigger mushy, where this trigger is, you know, 2 pound, and you breathe on it, it goes off, you know, and that also depends on level of skill. So if you can get into something, nerd out, and it does become expensive.
Dude, we could talk all day about gear. I'm on with you on board 100% with respect to, you know, the 870, with respect to, you know, a more powerful 30 caliber rifle for deer. And obviously, you know, as one of the trainers, I'm going to tell people to go out and get training. But
yeah,
what I think is definitely due for being said at this point in the podcast is the software that drives the hardware. And one of the things that I respect about you and your mission and what you've been doing with the Gray Man Project is kind of rewiring people's minds for the correct way to think, or a correct way to think, in a very pragmatic way. So let's kind of transition to talking about that with what you believe like the current definition of the gray man is, and then kind of go into stoicism. I'm just going to let you go as I sit back here and drink my drink my water.
You know, when I started the gray man, you know, there's the original idea of the gray man is was more about blending in. You know, it's people saw it as like, hey, let's just dress subdued, right? Which is great. That's absolutely, it's actually a great practice, right? That's the more tactical side of the practice. And the way I see the gray man, there's two ways to adopt the gray man. And it's a strategy. That's all it is. Gray man is a survival strategy that you can adopt when you need to, when things are a bit chaotic, or when you are out and about with your family. That's the tactical side. There's also what I call the lifestyle side, and that's the adopting Stoic philosophy to help with behavioral discipline. And that's what people forget, is that being the gray man isn't just about dressing one way or the other. It's about your behavioral discipline as well. You know, how are you reacting to the environment around you, and how is your brain processing that information? And then how are you reacting after that information has been processed? So it's not just an understanding of like, hey, I'm going to dress a certain way, but it's also adopting philosophy, knowing psychology, and understanding physiology, and then putting that all into practice. So, you know, if you want to adopt the gray man, you don't have to adopt it in the tactical sense. You can adopt it in the philosophical sense by saying, hey, I'm going to adopt, you know, a philosophy that helps me think a little better, a little bit more rationally. Because most of us who adopt the gray man are initiated in the study and skills and tools of survival, preparedness, shooting, martial arts. And when they say we're initiated, we are intimate with that knowledge. And so most of us who are intimate or initiated with that knowledge, we tend to carry a firearm. And the one thing that I see in our industry is a lot of egos, a lot of pride, and not a lot of people that are the cool guys are really able to handle that bitter taste of swallowing their pride and ego. And if you're going to be the gray man, you must have that behavioral discipline to understand that when someone is being disrespectful or nasty or cutting off and tracking and flipping you off, you're the one who's initiated. You're the one that has a firearm. You need to maintain rational control of your behavior, so that way the situation doesn't escalate and you find yourself dealing with way more drama than you probably ever want to, whether it's legally, whether it's civilly, or, and this is what people don't understand when it comes to taking a life, emotionally. Even if you feel like you're justified, it's not a simple process of the police officers going up going, all right, Bob, what happened? Well, Bill, he came at me with his fist. I drew my firearm and I shot, and he shot him right dead in his chest, and he's laying right there. And they're like, all right, sounds justified to me. It ain't like that. You're going to go through a lot of shit. Even if you think you're justified, there's going to be late nights when you're up in the middle of the night getting a mental ass whoop and wondering if you really did the right thing. You know, people don't understand really. I'm not saying all. I'm not saying all people. There's a lot of people out there that really have the same mindset that I do about the idea of being the gray man and having that emotion control, because none of us really wants to take a life. Just because you think you might be justified, you have to have that rational control to go, you know what, I can solve this issue without using my firearm. I think I can de-escalate this, or I think maybe I can handle this with my martial arts training, right? And you know, the police officer's going to come up. He's going to take your firearm, your $2,000 Glock that you fitted with RMRs and cuts and grips and stuff like that. And you're probably never going to see it again. They're going to take you down. You're going to get your lawyer, and you're going to sit with your lawyer with your adrenaline pumping through you, scared as shit, wondering if you're going away for the rest of your life because you used your firearm. And even if you get through all that, now you get the civil case, wrongful death, someone's going to sue you. So now you got to pay lawyer fees. And then you get through all of that crisp and clear. You still have your mind to contend with. Mm-hmm. And that, your mind will not let you down. We are humans. And look, I practice stoicism and it helps me a lot. It really does. It helps me, you know, at the end of the day, when I think about the past, you know, it helps me understand I can't change the past and I can't control the future. So I got to live here in the present moment. But we are still humans and we suffer the human condition to which there is no cure. And there's days where you'll wake up in the night and your brain is having at it like it owes you money. And you will be thinking about that time and wondering and replaying in your head over and over again, did I really need to use my firearm? Was it my ego? Was it my pride? You know, anyone in the right mind doesn't want to take a life. No one does. But yeah, it's a whole different world when you do.
You know, going.
And so.
Yeah, just go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, and so what I'm trying to teach with the Gray Man Project is not just pragmatic preparedness, but a mindset of survival. Of trying to survive what I call the harshest environment you will ever endure. That is your mind. Your mind will kill you or get you killed before anything else will. And what's funny is like you and I, we've taught survival. We know survival. We've taught preparedness and all these different things, but we're teaching skills for an event that has a 0.01% chance of happening. Yet when it comes to our mind, we deal with stressors. We deal with survival environments all day long, whether it's a financial survival environment, relationship survival environment, your kid's survival environment, right? We're all enduring survival environments every single day, and we're not teaching our brain the skills necessary. And so the way I look at stoicism and the gray man, it's a survival tool to be able to help you endure every day. Because what happens when you get stressed out? People turn to alcohol, they turn to drugs, they turn to overeating. And that will slowly kill you if you don't allow your mind to control your behavior through discipline and through temperance, wisdom, courage, and justice, which are the four cardinal virtues of stoicism. So every day you're surviving an event, every day you're dealing with stressors that can turn you to substances that you abuse that will and can eventually kill you or make your outcome worse than it really is.
You know, this mindset that you're talking about is the section of survival books that most people skip right past, right? If you're looking at a wilderness survival book, people want to see like, oh, how do you carve with a knife? Or how do you make traps? Or how do you build fires? Like they skip right past mindset. And then, you know, when you go to a shooting class, if there's a mindset brief, people are like, I didn't pay to hear someone talk about thinking. And it's like, okay, I get it. You want to shoot, you want to turn a whole bunch of money into noise, that type of thing. But the mind really is your ultimate nemesis, because our minds will torment us if we let them. Like you think about it, when there's an event at like your kid's school, right? I've seen this happen over and over. When I was a teacher, school would send out a text to the entire school saying, hey, we had a lockdown at the school, or we're doing an evacuation for whatever. Parents will send message after message saying, well, was it my kid? Was my kid? Or you'll be in like a Facebook message group and it'll be like about road conditions. You know, out in Utah, there's one for Provo Canyon. And people are like, well, what's the color of the vehicle involved? Because as soon as you hear that there's an accident, people think that it's their kid or whoever, or their husband or their wife or whoever, you know. And then, you know, there are other examples of people's minds getting the best of them. Like look at that show Alone, right? We've talked about, you know, Hollywood and TV, and, you know, we both have our pet peeves of different, you know, television shows. On that show Alone, oh my God, almost I'd say more than 50% of the people that leave that show leave because they convince themselves they're not there for the right reason, right? There's no one convincing them other than themselves. Oh, I wonder what's going on with my kid, or is it worth, you know, $500,000 to be away from my child, you know, in their early years? Like every one of those is a mindset problem, you know, where someone didn't have a filter or the correct lens to see the world with. You know, and by using those cardinal virtues, you run it through your temperance virtue. Is this the right thing to do? You know, and like you said, some people turn to vices, you know, and oh my God, I don't know what my husband's doing. Oh, I'm going to open up this bottle of wine, or I don't know where my wife is right now. I'm going to, you know, drink this bottle of Jack, you know, and of course I'm being sexist apparently, right? Because I'm talking about wine for women and Jack for men. But, you know, like, I think it's very easy to turn to weakness when you have a weak mind.
That's 100% true. And that goes back to that behavioral discipline. Mm-hmm. It's disciplining your behavior and choosing discipline over pleasures. And that's what Stoicism is about, is choosing virtue over pleasure, you know, and that is using, you know, the four cardinal virtues, you know, like, so when it comes to substance abuse, that's where the virtue of temperance comes in. Restraint, moderation, and all things you do, whether it's drinking, whether it's politics, whether it's, you know,
don't say cheesecake,
spending your money.
Don't say cheesecake. Don't say cheesecake, dude. As I'm like sitting here and I can feel like a fat roll over my gun. But no, it is true. Like I know that yesterday was my birthday, so of course I'm going to eat more, and I've got the Catholic guilt in me. I've got to finish it because there's starving kids in China. Right.
Yeah. But well, it's okay to do that, because there's nothing wrong with having pleasure every once in a while. You know, your life doesn't have to be dry. You know, when people think of Stoic, they think it's a philosophy to suppress emotions. It's mm-hmm. not. It's not about suppressing emotions. It's about controlling your emotions objectively with the rational part of your brain, so you don't make decisions under the influence of emotion. We know that we shouldn't make decisions under the influence of drugs and alcohol, and emotions affect your brain the same way. So why are we making decisions under the influence of emotions? So when it comes to being the gray man, it is about behavioral discipline. It's about controlling your mind. When we mentioned last time on the last podcast before we had to reshoot it, we talked about Viktor Frankl, mm-hmm. the book called Man's Search for Meaning. And Viktor Frankl said, which is my favorite quote, is between stimulus and response, there is space. And in that space, you have the power to choose your response. And it's that choice of your response lies your growth and your freedom. That is an actual physiological response to stimulus. You have two routes that information takes through once processed in your mind, in your brain. It's a long route and short route. From thalamus to amygdala, that's a short route. That's, to give an example, it's like when someone comes behind you and scares you, right? The first instinct, you know, depending on those who are initiated in martial arts, they might turn around and get in a judo stance. Then that information takes about a split second, takes a long route, goes through the sensory cortex, you know, which is the sight, hearing, you know, touch, all the good stuff, and then goes into hippocampus, responsible for contextual memory, which is, you know, names, dates, you know, times, things like that. And then it goes through amygdala, which is responsible for storing training and trauma. And it's that point where you decide, oh, it's my buddy, and I can pop him in the face if I choose to do so. I can still get away with it, but I'm not going to. And that space doesn't have to be a split second, though. So when someone disrespects you, or someone writes you a nasty email, or you're in a bad breakup relationship, that space can go a minute, an hour, a day, 2 weeks, a month before you decide to respond. You still have the choice to respond. Even from stimulus to response, you still have a choice to respond. And so when people are in their environment, they still have a choice to take a deep breath, observe the stimulus, and then make a rational decision based off the information given to them. But if you're full of emotion, full of adrenaline, and your body's dumping all those chemicals in your body, you have to learn to control your mind from reacting instinctively or irrationally.
You know, last time we were talking about Viktor Frankl, we kind of had to preface it by saying, you know, he was a Holocaust survivor, right? He was in the camps. And one of the most powerful things in that book that my friend Laura told me to read when I was going through some stuff, she's like, yeah, you got to look at this book, because here's a guy who watched his family, watched his friends getting murdered, right? Watched his people getting tortured. And he decided, which is such a freaking powerful move. He's like, I can decide how I feel about these people. And if I choose not to let them impact the way that I view the world, then they haven't won, you know? And he could obviously lash out. He could cry, but he was brave. And he just said, not going to let you impact me, you know? And he wrote that book, Search for Meaning, after experiencing the time in the camps. Like, if you guys have never read that book, I believe it's available for a free audio download. He actually reads it, and it's deep. Like, you can listen to any chapter in that book and learn a lesson. It's one of those books you could reread or re-listen to multiple times in your lifetime and pick up something new.
Over again. Yeah. Here's one, another quote that he had, which I think everyone should take note of, is that everything can be taken from a man, but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. You always have the power to choose how you feel about something.
Yep.
Your mind will try and tell you one thing. It'll try and make you feel sad or angry or all this, but you can choose your attitude about something. And it takes a lot of work. It's not like a flip of a switch. Of course, it takes a lot of introspect. And that is, you know, when you find yourself in a survival situation, when you find yourself in a preparedness situation or disaster, when you find yourself in some austere event where you're in a conflict, you can choose how you feel about that situation. You can see it as a chance to build your character, develop resilience. Someone asked me one time recently, he's like, you don't seem like a very happy person. And I said, for the most part, I am a happy person. And they go, the other part? And I said, character development, you know? And that's basically what it is. You have to look at survival situations, character development. And going back to, you know, when training, when people say, well, I'm not here because I don't want to learn how to think. It's like, well, I've been described in the tactical community as sharing a plate with a big juicy steak and on the vegetables. No one wants to eat the vegetables, but they know they have to because it's good for them. But everyone wants the big juicy steak of multicam and tactical stuff and operator and cool guy shit. But, you know, everyone will say that the weapon is the best mind, but they know more about their weapon than they do their own minds.
I think what we have to point out too is, like, it's easy to say that if something bad happens first thing in the morning, like, that bad experience can kind of temper the rest of your day, and it'll make you not see things that you should be seeing. But we have to admit that, let's say that you start off your day on a great note and you're like, man, everything is awesome today, right? And you're on that trajectory of everything's great. Because of that trajectory, you might not see the things that are bad around you. You know what I mean? Like, if there's a yin, there's a yang. So you see things that are bad first thing in the morning and you don't see the good throughout the day. Well, if you see things that are good in the morning, you might not see the bad throughout the day. So, like, this whole philosophy that you're talking about, it's kind of like taking a very, again, pragmatic approach, a very level and very reproducible approach to seeing the world around you. Like, does it impact me? How can I view this event? And it's software. That's the only way I can really describe it. It's a operating system.
It is. It's, I would say it's an app to your mind that you can use. You know, Stoicism is basically an app that you can open and close and use when you need to. But it's one of those things that if you adopt Stoicism, you need to live the Stoic life. Mm-hmm. Now, when we're talking about philosophy, we're not talking about, you know, a bunch of pot smoking hippies sitting around somewhere smoking pot talking about the universe. The Stoics meant for this philosophy to be as pragmatic and simple and understanding as possible. It's about reason. It's about the use of logic to help. Because you got to think about it. Philosophy came about during a time when, believe it or not, the world was shit. Like, it wasn't easy for Greeks and Romans and people 2,500 years ago. Life wasn't very easy. They didn't have pills, you know, to take. They didn't have medication. They didn't have psychologists or anything like that. All they had was watered down wine and philosophy, trying to use philosophy to explain the world around them, why they feel the way they feel, and how they can overcome the world around them. You know, they had plagues and wars and diseases, and there's always something just kind of shitty going on. For the average peasant back in the day, life was pretty trash. One of the philosophers that I really respect, his name is Epictetus, which literally means someone's property, he's owned. He had a bum leg, and he became a very well-known Stoic philosopher, exiled a couple times. But one of the things that I love about what he said is that sickness is a problem of the body, not of the mind. Same with lameness is a problem of the body, not of the mind, which I love. And another favorite quote of mine that helps me out all the time, and it's so simple, but always kind of helps me pull my head out of my ass, is Seneca the Younger said that we're more often frightened than hurt. We often suffer more in imagination than we do reality. Mm-hmm. And we really do. We absolutely do. And if we take those two quotes and apply them to survival situations, whether, you know, because you and I both know when it comes to wilderness survival, it's not like, you know, a couple of guys getting dumped off by Discovery Channel and they're full of food and water in their bellies and now they just got to go find stuff. Survival situations happen after the fall, after the crash, after something traumatic has happened, and now you manage to survive that. Now you got to figure out how the heck you're going to do it. And you're not always going to be in 100% condition. And so you take that quote by Epictetus and say, well, my injury is a problem of my body, not of my mind. I'm not going to let it affect my mind, because without your mind being in a rational condition, all the tools and skills that you have, that you've learned, spent years, you know, watching YouTube or writing books or whatever it was, it's not going to mean shit if you're not going to survive your brain first.
You know how many people are quick to try to exploit that, where, you know, someone will plant the seed like, oh, you're not going to do that. Or, oh, you don't want to do that. It's going to be cold and wet. And then people kind of be like, yeah, it is going to be cold and wet. I'm not going to go out today. And it's like, meanwhile, some of the best hunting I've ever done was cold and wet, you know, like when it's
that's
misting.
Because no one else is in the woods with you.
That is true. That is true. Right.
Yeah. No one else is in the woods. When you're willing to go further than everybody else, you're going to find yourself alone, but you're also going to find some solitude.
But if I listened to others, right. If I didn't, right. if I let them get into my mind, then I would have stayed home. Right. I would have missed out on that experience. So I think the other benefit of Stoicism is it allows us to kind of filter out and process the people around us. Like, okay, they don't think like me, and their method of thinking is highly irrational and emotional. They're not doing what I'm doing, you know, but there are some people who would kind of buy into their, you know, what the other people believe. And as a result, they won't do cool things.
They're easily affected by suggestion. Mm-hmm. And people have to learn some semblance of social independence. That is the ability to go your own way with confidence. And it sounds hippie-ish, but love for yourself. You know, people don't understand what that really does for you. When you truly actually love yourself and are confident in yourself, you're able to step away from the hive mind. You're able to step away from the suggestions of people and go, hey, that's a great thought. I appreciate that. But I'm gonna go my own way, you know? And there's nothing wrong with that. People fear in this society going their own way, stepping away from the hive mind, stepping away from what they've been enculturated or indoctrinated in, and deciding that, hey, I really like myself and I don't really align with your values, or I don't align with what you're saying. I wanna do what I wanna do because this makes me happy. And people, I think, are very afraid of being alone. But when you start to enjoy solitude, start being at peace with yourself, there's a whole different feeling, you know, and that really does come from a place of self-love, of going your own way.
Remember the video a couple of years ago with the guy that was kind of longboarding, drinking the Cran Apple, and he had Stevie Nicks in the background, man. Right? Like, that's a perfect example of it. Of a dude that
vibe.
It was just a vibe. Like, and we can all close our eyes and picture seeing that one person that they're like, hey, they're, you know, marching to the beat of their own drummer, right? Like, that dude is happy. He doesn't give a flying, you know, what about what anyone else thinks right now. He's just loving life. And guess what? Like, in a way, we should be envious of that guy if we can't just do our own thing and be individuals. Cause I think the trend right now is to kind of blend in, you know, have the 2.5 kids, the white picket fence house, the, you know, lemonade with the actual slices. Well, maybe you don't like lemonade. Maybe you want to have something else, but find you, you know? And I think that's the cool thing about the Stoics is that they were like, you know, you don't have to fall in line with everyone else and suffer from groupthink, like be an individual thinker and have these problem solving skills that help you, you know?
Marcus Aurelius said, the object of life is not to find yourself. How did he say it? It's not to find yourself amongst, it's a wonderful quote, but eventually it's escape the ranks of the insane, you know? But one thing that I think people should take note is just be content in the presence of yourself. When we look at that video, that guy was content in the presence of himself. He really was. He was in that moment. He was living in the present. He was enjoying himself.
Cran apple, baby.
It is. You know what I mean? Oh man. And that really went so far. Everyone took that. Yeah, it was funny.
And you know, everyone watched that video and it was such a positive video. Like I saw a video of a guy like in a Black Hawk with a minigun and like, he kind of, you know, was drinking Cran apple and like a lot of people copied it. Like it was just a positive video. And I'm pretty sure Cran, Ocean Spray bought him a truck, you know, cause he, yeah. I think the backstory was his vehicle broke and he's like, I'm still going to work, just jamming away, living life. Like it was awesome. You know, just a little throwback, but, you know.
Yeah, that quote by Marcus Aurelius is the object of life is not to be on the side of the majority, but to escape finding oneself in the ranks of the insane.
Ooh.
The object of life is not to be on the side of the majority, but to escape finding oneself in the ranks of the insane.
And they don't have to be the same, right? Like the majority doesn't have to be the insane, but there are a lot of people right now who are doing things that we would all consider insane, you know, like taking out ridiculous mortgages when you can't afford them. Right. Like
it's funny is when it comes to sales and marketing, the news, politician, it's all emotionally driven. They're trying to stimulate your emotions by posting angry stuff. I mean, like first thing you get up in the morning, everyone's on doom scrolling on their phone.
Yeah.
And they're setting their mind in a very terrible place right off the bat. You're allowing other people's words, writings, emotions affect your emotions because you don't agree with something politically or don't agree with something emotionally. You are losing control of your day first thing in the morning by doom scrolling on social media.
Yeah.
You have to take control of your own mind first thing because the rest of the day is going to be out of your control. But what you can't control are your emotions and your actions. That's Stoic wisdom. That's Stoic wisdom is understanding the difference between what you can control and what you can't control. And if you get up in the morning, you say, well, I can control my actions right now. So I'm going to go for a run. I'm going to go for a cold plunge. I'm going to take control of my day and do something that I want to do that brings me joy. So that at least the rest of the day, no matter what happens, I was at least in control of my morning and how I went.
Hell yeah. Dude, we're...
Are we getting close?
Yeah, we're getting close. One thing I want to say though is like when we wake up, right? Like if you spend 10 minutes watching the news, right? Do this tomorrow morning. Spend 10 minutes first thing that you do when you turn on the news. Just keep a little notepad next to you and either put down positive or negative. Like you hear a news story, just track what the mainstream news is pushing out there or local news. Almost you'll probably be closer to like 9 out of 10 stories are all negative. Right. As opposed to the positive. And if that's how you want to start your day, go ahead, you know, but just wake up and take in that sunshine or wake up and go hug your kid or kiss your wife on the cheek or, you know what I mean? Like start your day off.
Spend a couple of minutes reading meditations, spend a couple of minutes reading Marcus Aurelius, spend a couple of minutes
praying,
actually
whatever,
praying or meditating, you know, reading the Bible, you know, or doing something that takes control and puts some good thoughts, because at the end of the day, like I said, your brain, your mind is the one environment you have to endure, and you have to give your mind some tools, you know, some survival skills, you know, whether it's reading philosophy or opening the Bible or doing something to take control, but you've got to set your mind right. Otherwise, that environment is going to fuck with you all day long.
Speaking of reading, where can people read about the Gray Man Project and all the stuff that you're doing? Because you've got a shit ton of followers now. Like people, it's definitely taking hold. And I think more people need to read about it. So where can people find you?
The only place you can really find me right these days that I'm active is just Instagram, grayman.project. Grayman, G-R-A-Y-M-A-N, project.
Mm-hmm.
Not the English gray.
Yeah.
The American gray. G-R-A-Y. No, I'm kidding. But that's where I'm at right there. I'm still working on the website, bradypasillo.com, you know. ADHD and all that good stuff. So I just kind of, you know, make my couple posts in the morning, you know, just move on the rest of my day. So, but yeah, grayman.project is where you can find me on Instagram.
Cool. Dude, I mean, I want to do a part two of this one because we haven't even scratched the surface. Like we've only seen the tip of the iceberg. There's so much more below the waters, underneath the surface. But what I want to do is I just want to thank you for coming on. I really hate to have to jump off. I got to take a stupid meeting, but it's the other stuff that we do here at the company. So,
yeah.
I'm going to do that. But Brady, dude, we gotta get together at some point soon, whether you come out as a guest instructor or, you know, you join one of the courses that we're running out in Julian Ranch in California, or you hook up with Nate Jones or Jared, you know, Army Mace. I mean, guys, if you're not following Brady, you should. Brady's one of the good guys, right? And I'm very, very selective of the people I recommend in terms of, you know, trusted knowledge. Brady's one of them, right? So dude, thank you so much for coming on, man. And we'll continue this conversation in part two, but now I got to go do the boring stuff. And later I got to run because I'm still a fat bastard from eating all that cheesecake.
Much love to you, brother. Thank you so much for having me on, and much love to the Fieldcraft staff.
Hell yeah, dude. All right. Hang out for just a bit.
All right.
All right, guys, this has been the Fieldcraft Survival Podcast. Thank you so much for listening.